Pack session number 30342, reel 4.
That is Rob Downey get here. And of course, okay, you always got some bloke smoking date, and it didn't go very far at all. And of course, sometimes the pin didn't come up properly, and they had to shoot the grenade with a rifle and things like that to make sure it exploded and things like that. But you had to get on quick. It was a 9 second one, I think, and a 7 seconds, something like that, so really late. And you got pretty covered, you know. Mm-hmm. And there was one guy, like I say, like, so ready, about 3 or 4 feet away from where we were. And we managed to get back, and it did go off late, but we were all under cover, fortunately.
Did they have any, other veterans have talked about, this is a little bit later, and this is like 1941, 42, but other veterans have talked about emphasis on trench digging and things like that. Was that all gone by the time you joined the army, the kind of trench
warfare? Oh no, we had to dig trenches. You had an entrenching tool to dig a trench and things like that.
And so that was part of the training?
Part of the training, but you didn't do it in a great deal. It's only when you got to the battalion you had to learn to do it properly. More so when you got abroad.
Yeah. Right, Mr. McDonald. The last time we talked about Ransbeth, and you were just passing out at Bransford, basic training. Did you feel like a soldier then?
I thought I'm on the right track, as it were. You know, I thought, if I'm going to turn out right, I'll be able to handle it.
And so, out of these 30 men, were you all posted to within the DLI? Did anybody stay back at the camp? Or?
No, I think everyone went to DLIs, but they probably went to different battalions, like 40s, 50s or whatever.
Was nobody kept on as like an NCO training or, you know, specialist courses or anything?
Not to my knowledge, no. Mm-hmm.
So out of the 30 men that you were with, about how many of them do you think went to the 16th Battalion?
I don't really know. About half a dozen went to my battalion, but the rest I can't remember.
Can you remember the names of the men that you were with who went down?
Not the same platoon as me, I'm afraid.
But no, but just the names generally of...
Well, there was Tommy Monroe, there was McKay, there was Stanley, there was a fella called Burns. Jack Brett got killed in Algiers, I think.
What, say again, who?
Jack Brett, he come from Bladen somewhere, I think. And somewhere that way. And he went out, we were in Algiers or Tunisia, where it was, and he went and drank a load of wine and drink that, and apparently he got in one of these places that's of ill repute, as you may call it, and then he got murdered for what money he had. He wouldn't have much money and been a bookshee private. That was in the Jack Beth. He was a nice bloke and all.
When was that? Was that before he went into action?
Oh yeah, before he went into action, yeah.
What did people, just as moving us forward a little bit, but what was people's reaction when they heard about that? Because that wasn't even in combat or anything, it was...
Well, I was upset about it, but I'm quite upset because I know quite well him, and I was good friends and that, you know. And he got killed, as he ejected. It was Bladen you come from.
So you were posted to the 16th Battalion. Yeah. Did you have like a leave before you went down there? To the south coast?
I probably did, but I can't recall anything special about the leave at all, really. If I did have a leave, I can't recall about that, really.
So what was your first impressions of the 16th Battalion? What was your introduction to them?
Well, how different it was to the sort of the basic training sort of place and all that, you know.
What was different about it?
Well, went down to better weather, even in cold north, and go down to Kent and Sussex and places like that, which was ideal as far as that. And then we started really getting out to soldiering and things like that. It was really, you know, get your finger out, get over the hard work now, sort of thing. Like that.
So what was the routine? It
pretty much the same as you've got to get it. Well, Montgomery, General Montgomery, he started this PT before breakfast. And you had to get your PT kit on and run about and do all these exercises first thing. And we're at Campbell one time, and of course we had our white PT vests on with navy blue shorts and a Plimsolls, what they call them. I'm running about the sea beach. We had to run at the sea because the salt water dish, your feet are probably going to be an infantry man, sort of thing. So the story goes. And we got in there and we're about waist deep. And the aircraft come over, the Germans come over. And we couldn't get out of the water, we had to stay there as long as we could till the flew over and all that. And we must have spent what was paid to be for an eternity and just coming out of there. And when we got out the water, we had to run like hell. It didn't take a lot of running back to get back so we could get out the cold weather into the warm baths and get changed and all that. Because in the sea, the best of times, as you know, it's cold. And when you get there first thing in the morning, about just after 6 o'clock, half past six, it's bloody cold. And we was in that water for quite some time, like I said, and we went back, and that was one of the things that here, you know. I think a lot better things to do with this sort of thing.
So what was the setup of the 16th Battalion? Where were they actually based when you moved down to them?
I was moved to a place called Rye, and that's a little, I don't really know Rye at all, it's a very pretty little spot. Quite nice there. I enjoyed being there. But then we used to go for rifle practice in a place called Zed. Hythe as well, a place called Hythe, and do a training there. And especially before the other part of the conversation about this Jimmy Kerr's having to jump over that wire fence to get the bayonet stuck in. And then we had training all the rifles, like I said, Hythe. And then route marches and exercises something you've got there for days.
Can you describe a typical exercise, the big exercises?
One exercise, there was more than a DLIs, it must be nearly all the DLIs, B Company, C Company, D Company and all that. You know, and there's a Sherwood Foreigners and something else as well. And there was the whole of the Southern Command within that area was on this exercise. And it lasted all about a week. And then we said about 2 odd miles in the course of that week, sleeping rough and whatever, you just had trouble on all the sleep and things like that. Yeah. And when we finally finished the exercise, shattered and things like that, Colonel Ware, he came along in his Jeep. He said, I'm very proud of young boys, you've done a very good show and things like that. And of course, all the other regiments got in the wagons and drove up back to the barracks. He says, we are not these whatever mechanic soldiers, we are infantry. He says, we'll walk back. And he got back in his jeep, drove away. We had to walk back, and I took it very deeply with that because we really were shattered. And I thought, we said, well, that's, you couldn't let us go back that day. But no, the infantry didn't do that. They walked. They didn't have petrol feet. That's what you used to call them, petrol feet. We have to walk.
And so, what condition were you in when you?
When we got back, I don't know how far I had to walk back, it must have been about 10 or 15 miles before we finally got back to the barracks. And that, you know, when we got back there, we were all foot sore and weary. And we said, when you go for a long march and you do stop for about 10 minutes, you've got to try and sit in a ditch, in the lower part of the ditch, with your feet up like that, so the blood is running away from you.
That's what they trained you to do.
Yeah, and rest there till you decide what they tell you to go. And we used to do that, and it was okay. But I remember one time we had a Canadian officer with us. I don't ask me his name, I don't know his name. And when he got back, he was in a hell of a state. He was limping much worse than what we were because he had just joined the battalion from a rather tough company, so often on like a commando type style thing. And when he had come with us, I don't think he had roughed as much in his career as what we had on this particular march. When we got back to Rye, and all that, he was really bothered. And he says, right, old boys, dismiss, and to prove that he was as tough as the rest of us was, he ran all the way back again. His feet must have been red raw. He ran back all the way to these things like that. You know. I thought, well, that was a good thing to show the boys what he could do. And all that, you know.
So he earned your respect.
Yeah, yeah. You got a lot of respect from after that. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of them just used to get the papa to come along, look after the gear and things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Which he ran all the way back to his barracks and all that, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was quite impressive, that really.
Now, just to stay on that theme of the officers, you've mentioned Colonel Ware. Mm-hmm. You mentioned at Grantsbluth you didn't really have any contact with officers as such. Now, you'd moved down to the battalion. What was your first contact with what do you remember about the officers that you had at this stage? This would be what, in early 42, around about that period, mid 42.
Well, there was a lot of them were quite good. There was one, he was a nasty bloke. He looked with disdain upon everybody, you know, like a typical sort of working class rubbish and things like that. You know. We didn't get along with him at all. But on the whole, the officers weren't too bad. My officers was quite good. Barrington Jones, Major Hills, Dorian, McGregor. They were quite okay.
These were all your company officers?
Company officers, yeah.
Can you remember what platoon you were posted to?
I think it was the 3rd platoon, you know.
And what company was it?
B Company.
So it was B Company.
Yeah.
And how many of your friends from Bransworth went into your company, do you think?
No, I can't think of many at all. Maybe about 2 or 3, I can't really recall.
And those are the people we've mentioned before, Tommy Munro and Mackay.
Mackay and Wilson, somebody called Wilson. Mackay was a rough handful in him.
In what way was he a rough handful?
Well, he was right down to earth and all that sort of thing. And we're talking about grenades a little while ago. And we threw these grenades, and this one didn't go off. And Mackay was one of the best shots in the platoon. So they picked him to shoot the grenade with a rifle. Would it explode? Well, it was a good shot, and he hit the grenade, and it didn't go off. And he hit it again, and it didn't go off. And instead of taking cover this time, he knelt up and fired the rifle at the grenade. And the grenade exploded, and a bit of shrapnel come along and hit him just above the eye. My God, well, I've got the glass here now. And it took a bit off me, and of course it was pulled down the and I didn't know what the hell happened. And I started screaming, shouting, all that, come look up and all that sort of thing. You know. But there's a turnout, it was all right. But it was a very foolish thing to do. Is you should take cover of your friend and the grenade and things like that. No. But he didn't do it. He had done it 2 or 3 times, hit the grenade, and this time the grenade exploded and it was sat in the eye.
Now, you were in B Company, they were at Rye. The battalion had been gone for a couple of years, you know, been formed, so there were men that had been there quite a lot longer than yourselves.
Yeah.
Were you welcomed by the old hands? Or?
I think so, because although we had done our basic training, we were still very green, very rookies and all that. They should take the pay out of us, sort of thing, you can imagine.
But what would they make fun of you about?
Well, because you're quite green, you would volunteer for things that you should never have volunteered for, because you never volunteer in the army. You know, no. Anybody can play the piano, so he was really thinking that. Yeah, well, you go to King the Cookout, sort of thing, like that, didn't you? All that sort of thing.
What were the other jokes, though? What were the other.
Different things to ask you, know, about could you do this, could you do that? How tall are you? I think. About. What's he going to remember?
And that would be a way of luring it, it's like doing. Unpopular.
Yeah, that's how you're doing pretty hard, pretty sharp, pretty fast. Otherwise, you could really keep to make you and you do all the work and all that. You know. But you've got to sharp as them at no time at all.
Was the discipline more discipline here at Bransworth?
I'd say it's pretty much the same, you know. But like I said before, they find there's trouble with you, but they do go and jank us and things like that, you know, and they make. Clean the latrines, do anything that at all. It's a fine spot with it to do that sort of thing.
What were the billets like at Rye? Where were you?
Well, at Rye, we were living in a fair sized house, we were. I think it was 3 stories. And there was one guy, we all had beds then, you know, with the, not mattress, but they called biscuits, 3 biscuits, which made a mattress. And, there was one guy on the top floor, and he got married. And that was when you, sometime in the future, were going to go abroad. And he had just got married, and he was determined not to go abroad. So it was Saturday afternoon, I think, and he decided to shoot himself in the foot. So he got his rifle, put on his foot and pulled the trigger. Well, the guy below, in the room below, was lying on bed. Fortunately, he had his legs like this, and the bullet went straight through his bed. No, lad, you know. Well, he could very lucky escape there.
Well, what was his reaction to that?
The bloke kept there, we never saw him no more. He was going to get put in a very serious charge, but of course he had to whip him off to hospital. I don't know what happened.
What about the person that almost got shot, though? He wouldn't have been too pleased.
Oh, he didn't. I tell you that. He was very old rather getting that. And another time we had to, whatever you do, when you go around to the orchard, you're not allowed to eat any of this black currants and things like that. Because first thing you do, you're ravenously hungry. Everybody's eating all these black currants or whatever there were, some fruit like that. And of course, you didn't eat hard, it doesn't get as many as you could stuff down here. Of course, when we got back to the village, there's only two toys. Everybody got the trucks. And as soon as you're sitting on the trucks, when you're coming in, dragging off, getting back on there again, themselves and that, You think about it, it was really funny, but you couldn't move in case you finished your pants or sort of thing.
So what was the typical day when you were at Rye? Take us through a typical...
Well, one day, we had to change night into day, you know what I mean. So Ravalli was 6:30 at night. And wait till the next morning, and that was day 10 was night before, I mean. And of course, that was all right, but the point is, when it comes to go to bed, you want to go to the cinema and things like that, you see. So you go to the cinema in the afternoon, and when you go to the cinema, you had been doing little sleep, and you go straight to the exercise mode, so not again. All that a bit tough, and all that, change the night of the day, because you can't just swap over and make it happen at 6 in the morning when it's happened at 6 at night. But you had to do it because you're roaming about the field in the pitch dark and things like that. And just, we had to jump in some stream somewhere, and it was all sort of slime and all that. And you had to come out there and you just fucking down rain, just slide down the field and go to sleep again. Wake up the next morning, jumping about.
So how long did this last? How long did the night and the day last?
Oh, just 3 or 4 days, I should think. I don't think the officers went on to probably change the back from suit them as well. But one time on an exercise, this was in Winchelsea, we were at the walk through this wood in the autumn. And one of the trees had been felled, and the tree had such a width and circumference, the sort of thing, it was lying down flat. We had to jump over that sort of thing, which was quite funny because it was just about 2 foot 6 high water, wasn't it? You had to scramble over your full gear on. And of course, you had to keep running all the time on this exercise because it was non-stop. And of course, all the leaves had settled on the stream. And of course, when you're running, all you see is a footpath, and the footpath is a stream. And of course, you start running, and it's just like one of those Mickey Mouse cartoons you see. When they're running, therefore, they actually go down and all that, I found that quite amusing as well.
So was the training routine just as hectic as what it was at Bransworth then? Or was it more or less? Or?
Well, the assault courses was more arduous and things like that. They came up and they had a steel wire from a very tall tree right away down to about 6 foot. It must have been quite high there. Oh, we got up in our company called that. And what you had to do, you had to take a rifle strap off the rifle, hang it on there, and just go careering down, like that. That was quite a novelty. It was scary.
Now, you were posted to a platoon. What was your job in the platoon? What weapon did you have?
Well, I had a pretty good shot on a rifle. And it was quite good on the bread gun. But I soon realised it's folly to be clever with the bread gun because you got the job of carrying it. That's nobody wanted to do it because it was heavy, especially when you're marching along for quite a lot of miles. Anyway, you've got a fair share of it and things like that. But one thing that sticks in my mind, this fellow McCarthy again, when a little company runner there, a guy who delivers messages from one officer to the other. and you had a bicycle, and it was an army bicycle with a big heavy thing, you know, solid metal sort of thing, very heavy. And Casey got on and ride about. We walked about this, we were really shattered, and this Mackay says, the sergeant major, someone says, it's about time somebody else got that bloody bike, he says. You know, he's riding it all the time. Okay, you have it. Oh, great. So he got the bike, and so we got the bike, had to go across country. So there was no lad. We had a cow the bike on his shoulder. Oh, must have been 2 or 3 miles. And when he got to the end, come on, there was no lad. The officer says, you've had that bike long enough, Mackay. Give the bike again. So all he did was cow the bike, didn't get a chance to wear it at all. Which I thought that was quite fun. He didn't go on it himself, did Mackay.
So basically, when you were assigned to the platoon, would you be assigned to the Bren gun or to the rifle, or would there be any choice in both?
You're pretty much clear with both, actually. No, and you've got the Tommy gun as well, the Thompson submachine gun, as you call it, you know, TSMG. Then you've got the Sten gun. Well, the Sten gun was a load of rubbish compared to the Bren gun was the one that was very accurate.
But when you were in the platoon, would you keep the same role, or would you shift between roles? Would you become like the number two on the Bren, or and then move back to being a rifleman, or would it be the same?
You've got a reasonable share, like, but the guys who was sort of lucky enough to carry the damn thing, there's nobody giving a dog at all.
Did you have any contact with the anti-tank rifle? Was that still being used there?
Yes, yeah.
What do you remember about that?
We had to fire that, yeah. Yeah, that was right, to fire a big size bullet, that was, yeah. Fired that, you know, did that. Also, we had what they call a sticky bomb. Have you heard about that? A sticky bomb is a bomb about the size, like a sort of a watermelon, what they call it, I think. And he said, being this case, and the whole idea of the exercise was to go up to the tank, get a release in the tank, and stick the bomb on, and run on the other side. And that was going to disassemble the tank and all that, you know. Well, if it didn't, I don't know, but I would. When I saw that tanks actually, when I was actually in the war zone, I thought, well, silly, is there anything to do with that, you know. Because the tanks, when I saw a tank, I'm petrified, you were. Because it was so wonderful to see the Bushy private, like, without any cover at all, that, you know. When you see a tank coming up the water, like, you know, it was it, you know.
So the idea of going up with a, wouldn't really enter anybody's mind.
No, it didn't, no, you know. It just took it until you actually saw the thing what happened. You know?
Did you take, as a platoon, when you were out on exercises, did you take the anti-tank rifle? Did somebody have to carry that as well? Was that another job, or was that?
Well, it wasn't as bad as the Bren gun.
What was wrong with the Bren gun? Was it just the weight of it, or was it the way you had to carry it?
Well, you carry it anyway, like when you're on a march and all that, you know, because when you go down if you're walking through the town, you had to be as smart as a button stick. You had to carry your rifle at the trail or things like that. When you're away in the country, march away with nobody around, you know, you just, as long as you kept marching and all that, you know,
the rifle would be on your shoulder, yeah, that's normally, right. And then it would go to the trail, that's, which is like the formal thing.
Yeah, on your shoulder and all that. And you sing all the root songs and things like that, you know.
Can you remember any of them?
Well, not only Jolly songs, actually. Keep Your Fears with Jolly Henny. Have you heard that one?
No, what's that called? Like?
Keep Your Fears with Jolly Henny, that'd be happy so indeed. You may not be so happy so indeed. Keep this funny lad. Driving Bonnie Dreams Away, something like that.
No?
Oh, yes, an old Jolly song.
What are the songs?
No one is a mazer, but near as I may she remain. I never forget, as long as I live, she missed the train. That was another Jolly song. Mm. And of course, they played races.
Mm-hmm. Was there like a regimental song, a DNI song? Or?
I can't think of anyone. Oh, yeah. We'd beat the Kilo when you had to do a double march. You know, we do 162, when you went to the double, that's it, we make the key blow, the key blow, the key blow, we make the key blow. Have you heard the song before, then? Oh, yeah, it's a very popular song from way back, you know.
Yeah, did the marching songs help you with the march?
Well, yeah, because I had to play the band with that as well. The band played that as well. And you had to go hell for leather sort of thing, you know. So it was trotting, I suppose, we not doing marching, it was trotting, you know.
At this stage of your army career, you mentioned earlier that this one rope march where there was only two of you managed to finish.
Yeah, what was it? That was this. No, it was when I was in this battalion. That was Major Hillis and myself. Yeah. Mm.
So what What stopped other people? Was it sheer exhaustion, or was it the boots, or yeah?
I think it all shattered, tired of having nothing. Yeah. And I was determined I wasn't going to drop out. Then I could have dropped out any time along with them, but I thought myself, bugger it, I'll carry on.
What happened to the ones that dropped out? Was the trucks?
Oh no, they just no. There were so many dropped out, they couldn't punch anyone. You know, it was just.
No, but when they were left by the wayside, would there be a truck coming up to take them?
Well, they probably just got together in the heap somewhere. They can get picked up in due course. Would only rest, but they wouldn't get picked up. Well, they probably didn't get picked, but I finished up back in barracks again. You know, and it was right. This place was just Major Ellis.
Yeah. Now. What else do you remember about Major Hillis? He was one of your officers. Was he the one that stands out in retrospect, or were there others that?
Well, I rather liked him, and he went on a route march one time. We got back to Rye. I'd been, and he went in the pub and he said, "All right, boys, I'll buy you a pint," which was one thing. But he went in the saloon bar away from us, but everybody had been up to.
That was the whole company.
Well, the whole platoon houses.
So he's the
platoon. Well, probably not anybody went to the pub, you see. Probably some blokes went to back to the barracks or whatever it was. But anybody who went to the pub, you know, he would have been.
What did everybody think then?
Yeah.
But he wouldn't actually mix. Wasn't allowed to because of.
Boxes. Oh no, no. But he was all right. He would come and talk to him in the garden, and he was very good to listen to, and he saw your point of view.
In what way was he good to listen to? What would he?
Well, when he was telling us, you know, you could see he was sincere and all that, not trying to give you a bit of bull, you know.
Where was he from?
Hull, I think. I think his parents were something to do with the timber company, or Sawyer or something like that, something to do with timber business.
And you mentioned Lieutenant Dorian. What about him? How did he strike you? You said earlier that he was...
Well, he spent the same school as I did, that I don't know, he went to the same church I did, but I didn't know him, but apparently... From what I can gather, he was a shoe salesman before he went to in the army. And of course, I suppose he had the patter, you know, being able to talk to people. Whereas being the building trade and things like that, he didn't, wasn't very clever at talking. But he got his all right, didn't he? That was the one to get further on the story, like, when they have a pack in that, you know.
No, that was, he was taken prisoner with him. What about Babington Jones, at this stage?
I didn't mind him, because... He was a lawyer or solicitor or something, he was in City Street and that, you know. And he wouldn't do anything, he wouldn't ask you to do anything that he wouldn't do himself, you know, which was a pretty tough cookie and all that. But yeah, he would do it himself. So he said, well, if he can do it, then he got on with that, you know.
And Lieutenant McGregor's on the photograph as well. Do you remember anything about him?
Well, he was a gentle little man. As if he was a... You got the impression like you shouldn't be with all these roughnecks sort of thing, you know. But he's a nice little bloke.
Do you remember an officer called Kaufman? He was another one that apparently was with you for a while. Kaufman.
No, another, can't you call it?
Yeah. Now, when you were on the route marches and so on, would the officers have to be on the march with you?
Oh, yeah.
And how did they cope with it?
Well, I suppose they took advantage of so many people dropping off with them sort of thing, you know.
Was there any kind of emphasis? I mean, you mentioned Major Hillis wanting to finish the route march. Was there that kind of mentality that they would have? They'd have to be at least as good or better?
Well, I thought so, but I think to finish they probably weren't as fit, you know. But he, the Major Hillis, the command master, he was determined that he was going to do it. You see? And you sort of you get a second wind, as it were, you know, if you've been up and over there, you book it. And you sort of, you know, you get a bit okay again.
Now, you were in, new battalion, new experience, new part of the world. How did the locals treat you in Rye? And when, I mean, were you able to meet anybody locally, or were there any kind of dances or entertainment?
Well, I didn't meet anybody. The girls or that when I've had anybody do that, any girls and that, you know, I thought I think they would. You had a couple of beers with the lads, and that was about some of it. But some of the fellas that could, well, none of the lads could dance and all that. I was never a dancing man. I say, go to the dance after 10 o'clock at night sort of thing, or the pub closed and that sort of thing, and that, you know, after I come back as well. That wasn't a great drinking man, but that was just something to do.
Apparently there were lots of Canadians in the area. Did you have any truck with them? Any?
Well, that's the guy, that officer I was talking with, a Canadian one, he won at the